Hello there, folks. Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Undercover Bubble Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Moore, and I'd like to thank you very much for joining me once again to take a deep dive into this interesting thing that we call the conservative media bubble. So first off, I'd like to apologize for taking so long to get this episode out, and there's two reasons why that happened. So first of all, as I said on my Twitter account, I've been working on a number of other non-political projects, mostly doing music production, over the last few weeks, and that hasn't really left me a lot of time to be able to write and record an episode. But number two, more importantly, I've wanted to record and write this episode for a while now, but things just kept happening as I was getting ready to actually write the episode and record it. And this is a problem I've been having actually with a lot of different episodes that I've been working on, mainly the Elon Musk and Twitter episode that just keeps spiraling more and more and more into just infinite craziness. So hopefully that one will be the next one I do, barring any sort of crazy thing happening in the bubble. But with these things in mind, I do want to make a quick announcement that over the next couple of months, because of all these other projects that I've been working on, and I highly encourage you to follow my Twitter account at PMOTheMusicMan if you want to see those other things that I'm doing, I'm going to be taking down the cadence at which I put out new episodes for the time being. Normally, I try and do one roughly every 2 weeks or so. So my guess is, again, unless something crazy happens in the bubble that I just have to talk about, you're going to be seeing one or two episodes at most until February. And then in February, I will be going on vacation and I'll be off for a month. And so the next episode after that will likely come out in mid-March. And hopefully by then, I'll be done with all my other projects and I can get back to talking about the bubble. So knowing my luck, I've jinxed it. And during my break in February, Donald Trump will get indicted, the war will end in Ukraine, and Tucker Carlson will get embroiled in some sort of sex scandal. But in all seriousness, there hasn't really been much coming from the bubble in this last month or so. It's mostly just been about Hunter Biden's laptop and the Twitter files that Elon Musk put out, and basically just more of the same that we've always been seeing with regards to just trying to distract their viewers from what's going on in real life. But there has, of course, been one very massive and notable exception. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about Kanye West. So I've been following this story since early October, thinking something might come of it, and boy, oh boy, was my patience rewarded. And I am aware that at this point it is sort of old news now. We haven't really heard anything from that front for the last couple of weeks or so. But I wanted to talk about it today because of the implications that the right's reaction to it could have, both on our political discourse and on the future of politics in this country in general. And the reason I say this is because of a trend that I and many others who have studied this a lot more than me have seen in countries that are sort of leaning towards becoming more authoritarian. And there's many different names for this phenomenon, but personally, I call it claim and blame. In other words, whatever group we're talking about that has authoritarian aspirations or tendencies, they claim that their side is being suppressed and or marginalized, and they blame the others, typically in the government, for this happening. And it tends to start out very general. For example, they'll say something to the effect of, there are people in the government or big business or a secret cabal within the government who want our views silenced. And I've said it many times before on this show. This sort of rhetoric is, at least in the beginning, vague by design, because it allows those who speak it lots of leeway with regard to who exactly is to blame. So in other words, by keeping things vague, by saying there are just people in the government who want us silenced, the target can be whoever they want it to be. And right-wing nationalists have learned, and we can use Hitler as a prime example of this, that people will eventually go along with things like the Holocaust if they're let into it slowly. Cue the famous frog in boiling water analogy. And so, as I said, there's people who are a lot smarter and have studied this a lot more than me, who have written way more about it than I ever could. So I'm going to defer to one of them here and talk about the writings of Umberto Eco. He was an Italian philosopher and writer who grew up under Mussolini's fascist Italy. And he wrote in 1995 about the tenets of fascist ideology and why we should look out for them. In his essay, he wrote about 14 typical features of fascism. Now, obviously, it would take way too much time to go through all of them, so today I want to focus just on three of them. The first one is called fear of difference. And this states that fascism always, and when I say always, I mean always, appeals to the idea of sameness and unity within the fascist state. Of course, this inevitably results in the promotion of racism and religious nationalism. And obviously, we've been seeing that specifically in the last few years with the rise of things like the Tea Party and QAnon and the Christian nationalist movement. The second feature is appeal to social frustration. In other words, fascism convinces its followers that they are being oppressed, both socially and economically, by the powers that be. And again, this is the claim part of what I call claim and blame. And the third tenet that I'd like to talk about is the obsession with a plot. Fascism always needs an enemy. And what better and more convenient enemy to have than the one within the current government? Thus, the plot, cabal, conspiracy trope that we see in a lot of places like QAnon, and in this example that I'm going to talk about today, Kanye West and his Jewish conspiracy. And again, this is the blame part of claim and blame. So when we put these three tenets together into one sentence, we get that fascism always appeals to the idea of sameness and unity, and therefore anyone that's different from us is dangerous, saying that the people who are different from us are the ones oppressing us, and there is a plot against us by these people to marginalize and or eliminate us entirely. And these are basically the exact points that both Kanye West and Nick Fuentes are now regularly making with almost zero pushback from anyone in the conservative media bubble. But before I talk about that, I'd just like to go through a very quick timeline of exactly what happened so that we can sort of set the stage of how the bubble reacted to it and why it's so concerning. So let's start at the beginning. This whole fiasco with Kanye West began October 3rd, when Kanye wore a White Lives Matter shirt to a fashion show. This, of course, brought universal condemnation pretty much everywhere in news media, except in the bubble, where the only real response that I saw was from Candace Owens, the black conservative activist who works for the Daily Wire. On her own political talk show the next day, she, too, wore a White Lives Matter t-shirt in solidarity with Kanye. I see we're off to a pretty good start already. A couple of days later, on October 6th, Kanye went on Tucker Carlson Tonight to try and explain himself. He said that he thought the idea of him wearing it was funny. He also said that he made the shirt himself, and the reason that he made the shirt is because he believes that they do. In other words, he believes that white lives matter. And as I've explained before many times on this show, white lives matter is specifically an antithesis response to Black Lives Matter, which in and of itself implies that white lives matter more than black lives. Whereas the Black Lives Matter slogan, the guy who founded it, actually said there's meant to be an implicit two at the end of that. So in other words, Black Lives Matter two. And so because white lives matter does not have this implicit two at the end of it, it's just a direct response to Black Lives Matter, it means that by definition, the White Lives Matter movement and slogan is racist, which makes it even more confusing, at least at the time, as to why Kanye West would wear something like this. Because as we all know, back in the mid-2000s, he had that infamous quote of George W. Bush doesn't care about black people. But in the moment, I sort of let it slide. I took him at his word because, as we all know, Kanye West has always been a pretty eccentric guy. So I told myself, yeah, I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility for him to do something like this, to send a message or maybe promote a new album he's coming out with or something. But what he did next on social media definitely put any idea that he wasn't serious to bed. He followed up the Tucker interview with an Instagram post saying that fellow rapper Diddy is controlled by Jewish media after Diddy condemned the White Lives Matter t-shirt. Kanye's Instagram got restricted, understandably, after he posted this. As a result of his Instagram suspension, he later posted his infamous "I'm gonna go DEFCON 3 on Jewish people" tweet. As a result of that, Twitter then suspended him. At this point, Elon Musk, who hadn't purchased Twitter yet, talked to him, apparently, and said that he, quote, expressed concerns over his tweets, which Kanye took to heart. But as we now know, and I'll detail in the future episode on him, Elon shouldn't exactly be taken at his word over anything he says on Twitter or about Twitter. So as you might guess, this did not bode well for the image of Kanye West or anyone associated with him. But nevertheless, the same day, the GOP House Judiciary Twitter account posted three words in solidarity with everyone involved: Kanye, Elon, Trump. And to me, this says a lot about the mainstream GOP's thinking in terms of how far they're really willing to go to appeal to their racist, fascist, anti-Semitic base. The fact that all this had happened in the same day, with the Diddy tweet about the Jewish conspiracy or going DEFCON 3 on Jewish people, the fact that they tweeted this out anyway is very telling to me, and also very dangerous, because it means that they stood in solidarity with Kanye's condemnation of the Jewish conspiracy and blame of his woes on Jewish people. In other words, the fact that they didn't immediately either delete this tweet or just not send it out in the first place can only mean that they agreed with his sentiments. And as I said, this tweet stayed up, signifying that they stood with him no matter what happened. And on October 12th, a few days later, some more things started happening. Vice News reported that there were, quote, numerous anti-Semitic sentiments cut from his Tucker interview. A few days after that, on October 16th, Kanye went on the Drink Champs podcast and said, quote, Jewish people have owned the black voice. He then bragged that he could say all sorts of anti-Semitic things, and Adidas couldn't drop him because he brings them in so much money. On a side note, he also claimed on that same podcast that George Floyd actually died of a fentanyl overdose and not Derek Chauvin's knee. He said, quote, if you look, the guy's knee wasn't even on his neck like that. We've come a long way since George Bush doesn't care about black people, folks. And it just keeps getting worse as we go along. One day later, he got interviewed by Chris Cuomo. He said he was being attacked by the Jewish underground media mafia. And throughout this whole two-week period or so, sponsors, magazines, and even LeBron James began dropping his deals and distancing themselves from him and his comments. Basically, because Kanye has been so popular for so long, it's always sort of been an unspoken truth in the business world that Ye can do no wrong. Because he's a billionaire and a genius and the voice of a generation and a musical mastermind and everything else that he claims himself to be. But it seems like praising Hitler and blatant anti-Semitism is going one step too far for his sponsors and friends. But that doesn't mean he didn't have supporters, especially in the bubble. On October 22nd, we saw our first sign of solidarity. On an LA freeway overpass, banners were hung up saying, quote, Kanye is right about the Jews. The people who put the banners up stood on the freeway overpass and did Nazi salutes to the passing cars. Apparently, there were lots of honks in support of what these signs said. It was almost as if Kanye becoming publicly anti-Semitic gave a lot of other people permission to be publicly anti-Semitic, and they knew nothing would happen to them because nothing was happening to Kanye. Other than losing his sponsorships, he was still a billionaire and just an extremely well-known and well-respected rapper and musician. But that started to change, finally, on October 27th. A bombshell CNN article came out saying that Kanye had long been fascinated by Adolf Hitler and even wanted to name his 2018 album after him. The article said, quote, he would praise Hitler by saying how incredible it was that he was able to accumulate so much power and would talk about all the great things he and the Nazi Party achieved for the German people. Obviously, this kind of ruffled a lot of feathers around the country in the mainstream media. And as the days went on and more about this story came out, reports began coming in from multiple sources corroborating the CNN story. TMZ, for example, had a story about Kanye going on a massive anti-Semitic rant at their offices in 2018. At the time, the story was buried because, well, he's Kanye, and Kanye can do no wrong. But it seems like the CNN story kind of broke the dam on Kanye's invincibility. Because if there's one thing that most Republicans and Democrats can agree on, it's that the Nazis were bad and that Hitler was also bad. So when you publicly praise the Nazis and Hitler, it tends not to go very well for you, no matter what side of the spectrum you're on. And so with this release of the CNN piece, there was kind of radio silence from Kanye and his supporters for the next 3 weeks. Not only because the story was so damning, but also because it was election time and that sort of dominated the media for the next couple weeks. But then on November 22nd, Kanye made his triumphant return to the mainstream media with the dinner heard round the world. Kanye, Milo Yiannopoulos, and Nick Fuentes all went to dinner at Mar-a-Lago with Donald Trump. Apparently, Milo Yiannopoulos himself actually organized the dinner and insisted Nick Fuentes go along with Kanye to meet Trump. So as long as we're on the subject, let's talk a little bit about Nick Fuentes and who he is and what he believes. Nick Fuentes presents himself as a young, loud, charismatic voice in the conservative movement who knows what's really important to the people and what they really want. And what might that be? Here's an example from his show in the days following the dinner at Mar-a-Lago. I will note this clip does contain an F-bomb. I'm leaving it in there for both dramatic effect and to make my point. So, listener discretion advised.
To have a civilization, you need to have class, okay? When I say class, I mean classes. You need to have commoners and aristocrats and kings, and we don't have that anymore. There's no semblance of that. There's no semblance of society, meaning like clubs and people knowing each other and this sort of large amounts of social capital being invested in particular kinds of things. It's not there. It's not there in the universities. It's not in the designer brands. Not in the industry. In industry, it doesn't exist anymore. We've just got this big N-word free-for-all. It's a big end-up, N-rified, J-ified free-for-all. We live in Africa with more stuff, okay? We live in Africa or Mexico with more stuff. We live in a big Middle Eastern bazaar. We're a big fucking Middle Eastern bazaar with people sitting on blankets and selling cockroaches on sticks.
So if you didn't catch the not-so-subtle subtext of his remarks there, he is clearly and openly and unabashedly and unapologetically a racist, Christian nationalist, fascist, and of course, anti-Semite. And not only is he okay with all of these labels being applied to him, he embraces them and wears them as a badge of pride. In the past, he's said things like, call me anti-Semitic, call me racist, I don't care, I know I'm right. He also espouses the virtues of what he calls a classed society. And he even explains it for us. In his view, there should be a hierarchy of commoners, aristocrats, and kings. And this viewpoint is going way back to the very foundations of conservatism that I talked about in the first episode of this podcast. Specifically, Burke and de Maistre defending the monarchy and the aristocracy. So Fuentes is, with this statement, in essence, the perfect embodiment of classical conservatism. After all, he's promoting all three of its core tenets. So if you don't remember, I'll refresh your memory and tell you how Fuentes' statement ties to each one of them. So first is realism, which basically states that mankind, with no societal boundaries, will be in a constant state of war with itself because everyone wants nothing but to enrich themselves over everyone else. And so the way Nick Fuentes characterizes this in his statement is saying that we currently live in, quote, a big N-word free-for-all. And actually, I'm quite surprised that he was able to stop himself from actually saying the N-word, because if you watch the video of this statement, you can see he really wants to get that N-word out. But he knows that he would be completely just canceled and destroyed if he did, so he's able to stop himself. But the point I'm trying to make here is that he says that because we don't have aristocrats and kings and commoners, he says that there's really no semblance of real society in modern America. Therefore, if there's no real society, we have to go with the Thomas Hobbes view of humanity that we are in a constant state of war of everyone versus everyone. So moving on to the second tenet, tradition, which basically states that we're much better off following what previous people have already done and told us to do because it's safe and because it works. Fuentes says that he believes that we don't have the social capital of a class society with peasants and aristocrats, and that this is a bad thing. He doesn't explain what he means by social capital, but what I believe he's trying to say is that the way things used to be back in, let's say, the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, where you had a small group of upper crust people in every society that interacted with each other and sort of drove the economic and political machines of each country, he thinks that that's the ideal thing to do, and there's no other reason for it other than, well, it worked before. So finally, the third and most important aspect of conservatism, social hierarchy, states that there's a natural order to the world where some people are just better than others, and they're the ones that deserve the power. And this is really the foundation of his whole argument, of him saying we need to go back to a time when these classes existed, simply because we know that it was right. And because these classes don't exist now, because this structure of society that was working so well in the Renaissance isn't there now, that's why we have this N-wordified free-for-all. It's both a very bleak and very narrow view of how society works, and more importantly, how society has changed over the last 300 years. The fact is, these marginalized peoples, these commoners that he wants to put under heel, are now the foundation of the world, rather than the aristocracy. But it doesn't matter to Nick Fuentes, because in his view, it's the fact that these people have any power at all that is part of the problem. And it's clear to me that his throwaway comments about N-word people and J-word people are definitely meant to signal that these people don't belong in this society. So that's Nick Fuentes in a nutshell. He's a racist, Christian nationalist, and fascist who wants nothing more than to put the commoners in their place. And the fact that Kanye West, but more importantly, the former and at this point likely 2024 nominee for president, is listening to him, says a lot to me about the state of the right in America. And here's the other thing I want to discuss about Nick Fuentes. He's not just part of the fringe of the bubble, at least not anymore. He is wildly popular with the conservative base. I'd say the fact that he's even getting popular and given a major platform to espouse his views to millions of people says even more about what's going on in the bubble and conservatism in general. And this phenomenon only really seems to be growing at this point. Things that before would have been confined to the conspiratorial inner part of the bubble are now being discussed openly by prominent mainstream conservatives. And as an example of this, here's Newsmax making excuses for Nick Fuentes and throwing some both sidesism in there as well.
One of the biggest threats to your freedom is the left-wing opinion hosts who laughingly call themselves reporters, journalists, or news people. The press has been obsessed with anti-Semitism for about 4 days now. Since it was revealed that President Trump had dinner with Kanye West, who's been spewing, well, anti-Semitic rhetoric. Also present was a guy by the name of Nick Fuentes, who I don't know, but I have looked up some of the statements and find him to be every bit the Jew hater that AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Louis Farrakhan are.
So basically, Newsmax here is sort of both trying to play both sides while at the same time leaving the door open in case these views go mainstream for them to say, see, we never said anything bad about him. We just didn't know him at the time. And that's exactly what Trump said about Nick Fuentes when he was asked about it. But he was betrayed by Kanye West himself, who said that Trump was actually, quote, really impressed with Nick Fuentes, who apparently kept praising Trump the whole dinner and said something to the effect of, you need to stop dancing around these issues that are controversial and just throw yourself into the fire because people will respect you more when you do that. In other words, Nick Fuentes was straight up telling Trump, do not be afraid to be openly racist or fascist or Christian nationalist like I am, because controversy is a good thing, because as Trump knows, there's no such thing as bad publicity. And not only that, it'll make you even more popular with the Christian nationalist, fascist, racist base. But all in all, in terms of the mainstream media's reaction to the Trump-Kanye Fuentes dinner, it was not a good thing for anyone involved. And at various points throughout the next week, Kanye was either investigated, dumped by more sponsors, or stormed off podcasts that gave him any sort of pushback. Which brings us, finally, to the main event, December 1st, and the infamous Alex Jones interview. So I honestly didn't remember how bad it was until I compiled my notes together and listened to these clips again. And I'm sure many of you have heard these already, but I want to play them again just to really hammer in exactly what Kanye said and why it's so significant.
And the Nazis, in my view, were thugs. It shook people down, did a lot of really bad things.
Well, they did good things, too. We're going to stop dissing the Nazis all the time. It's like he had a really cool outfit and stuff, and he was a really good architect. And
so you're in love with the look of it.
And he didn't kill 6 million Jews. That's just like factually incorrect.
Guys, get the Ronald Reagan clip they showed me yesterday. Sorry, go ahead. Ronald Reagan said that too. Well, I think Hitler did target and kill some people. So I think, you know.
I think Obama killed Palestinians.
No, I hear you. Here's where I think the frustration is. And Nick, you can comment on this.
And Obama was not the first black president. He was another Jewish president.
I don't think Hitler was a good guy. I get the Hugo Boss uniforms. Amazing. But I mean, just because you're in love with the design, you're a designer. Can we just kind of say, like, you like the uniforms, but that's about
no,
it.
There's a lot of things that I love about Hitler. A lot of things.
You're not a Nazi. You don't deserve to be called that and demonized.
Well, I see good things about Hitler also. I love everyone, and Jewish people are not going to tell me you can love, you know, us, and you can love what we're doing to you with the contracts, and you can love what we're, you know, what we're pushing with the pornography. But this guy that invented highways, invented the very microphone that I use as a musician, you can't say out loud that this person ever did anything good. And I'm done with that. I'm done with the classifications. Every human being has something of value that they brought to the table, especially Hitler.
So I think one of my, I shouldn't say favorite things, but the most interesting thing about it is that Alex Jones, at pretty much every turn, tries to give Kanye a way of backing out of his statements or saying, oh, well, you liked how the uniforms looked, but you don't really like the guy himself. And every time Alex Jones did this, Kanye just dug himself deeper. And by the end of this, Alex Jones was quite literally laughing out loud, not because what he was saying was funny, but it was more of a nervous laugh, like, oh my God, this guy is really serious about admiring Hitler and the Nazis. So when you've even got Alex Jones, of all people, trying to talk you down and saying you're going too far, you've definitely got some issues. And I say this as a person who wants to see Kanye not be crazy. And I feel like this really proves that Kanye is legitimately, seriously troubled in his mind and needs professional help. So I hope he gets it. From one fellow human to another, I hope he gets the help that he needs. But that being said, it is completely understandable that the reaction by most sane people to what Kanye said was immediate condemnation, shock, and disbelief. And in case you thought, oh, well, maybe he'll say I went too far, it got even worse just later that day when Kanye tweeted out one of the most offensive images I've ever seen of a Star of David intermingled inside a swastika. And it was only after this happened that both Elon Musk finally took action and banned him from Twitter, and more importantly, in my opinion, that the GOP Judiciary Committee Twitter account finally deleted its Kanye Elon Trump tweet. So, I mean, I guess all it takes is some blatant Nazism, praising Hitler multiple times, and unapologetic anti-Semitism, and doubling and tripling down on all of these things for the GOP to abandon someone. But even then, as I'm going to show you in a little bit, this doesn't really mean that the GOP abandoned Kanye so much as just tried to sort of forget that he existed. And so with that, let's go into the Bubble's reaction to Kanye's Alex Jones interview. And let's start with InfoWars, since they're the ones that did the interview. And as expected, in the days following the interview, it was front and center news. There was a link to the whole thing right on the front page. However, I should mention that there was nothing anywhere in either articles written about it on InfoWars or posted clips that showed Kanye's anti-Semitic, pro-Nazi, or Hitler remarks. There were just a couple of clips of Kanye saying people are afraid of the truth and that he's a, quote, savant for love. So, to me, it seems like InfoWars isn't really shying away from the controversy they've caused, but at the same time, they don't really want to specifically talk about it. They're not doing what Nick Fuentes would want them to do, which is to take the controversy, embrace it, say, yes, he said these anti-Semitic things and we're not sorry we put them on the air, and just running with that. So my guess is that they don't want to do this, not because they may or may not believe in it, but because they're just trying to get more views and more business to InfoWars itself without rattling the wrong cages. And as if to prove my point, literally every single clip of the Kanye interview that appeared on InfoWars ends in Alex Jones hawking InfoWars lifestyle products. And I should also mention that every page relating to this story has a plea for money at the bottom of it, saying something to the effect of, left-wing radicals are attempting to destroy Alex Jones via the court system. So as I've said many times on this show, this is just another example of a guy trying to take some money from stupid conservative people. Fox News, on the other hand, was interesting in that they literally did not say anything about Kanye West or Alex Jones or the interview at all. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, if I had only been watching Fox News, I would never have known it had even happened. In the days after the interview came out, I looked at Fox News both on their website and watching their programming, and not once did I see Kanye or Alex Jones mentioned in any way. It was mostly just more scare pieces about trans people trying to sexualize children. One America, on the other hand, did have a single article talking about the Alex Jones interview. It was pretty matter of fact and actually mentioned that he had been banned from Twitter before it said anything about his Alex Jones interview. And even then, it only mentioned once his comments praising Hitler and the Nazis. The rest of the article talked about what he was wearing and the reaction of people like Joe Biden and some prominent Republicans to what he said. But the interesting thing about this article is that throughout it, it sort of tries to give the idea that in a lot of ways, Kanye is the victim here. It calls the Trump dinner, quote, quick and uneventful, and talks a lot about how Kanye has been banned from social media platforms for his anti-Semitic remarks. And while the article doesn't explicitly say that this was a bad thing, or that he shouldn't have been banned, or that what he said wasn't bad, it kind of does the same thing as InfoWars in trying to sort of play both sides. Like, he's the victim, but he also did this bad thing in saying all these anti-Semitic things. And we see a very similar perspective when we go to Newsmax. The article talking about the Kanye West interview is from a very neutral perspective and states very matter-of-factly what Kanye said, which is a good thing. But the issue here is that this wasn't even the first article that came up in the search when I searched for it on Newsmax's website. The first thing that came up was a pretty ho-hum story about Kanye West buying Parler. Another article calls his Twitter suspension a, quote, development. And that's it. There's nothing more about the interview on Newsmax other than just stating very matter-of-factly that it happened. And none of these articles ever mention his anti-Semitism. They're all mostly about his financial and his musical success. And as I'm going through the rest of the sources that I looked at, I'd like you to think about, what does that tell you about the people running Newsmax? That they just don't want to talk about Kanye's anti-Semitism and instead just want to focus on the good things. So moving on to the Federalist, they weren't even talking about it at all. In fact, there was nothing posted on the Federalist about Kanye since October, when his anti-Semitic rant first got him banned. And it was under an article entitled, Kanye West Shouldn't Be Censored, But He's Got Some Explaining to Do. The article, I would say, is a very strange amalgamation of the author's identity crisis as a conservative Jew and all but defending Kanye as a crusader against the left. So here's a little snippet from that article for you to get the idea. Quote, Kanye is a split screen, both a bloviating cultural force with a bruised ego and an attractive brand of anti-establishment revolutionary who bears the scars of leftist tyranny, his family having been destroyed by Hollywood. The author goes on to talk about how after Kanye posted his DEFCON 3 comments, many conservatives, and even a few Jewish ones, came out to support him. So to me, it seems like the author here is both condemning anti-Semitic tropes and subtly pushing them. So again, I want you to think about, what does that tell you about the state of mind of people who run the conservative bubble if this is what they're willing to say about comments that are just so obviously horrible and racist and anti-Semitic and completely devoid of logic? Now, to the author's credit, he does end the article by saying, quote, it is far better for the conservative movement to lose a guy like Kanye than to lose its refusal to tolerate racial animosity. But the point is, other than this one article that, by the way, came out basically when all this first started, the Federalist has been completely silent. The question is, are they silent because they don't want to get involved in the firestorm? Or is their silence more symbolic for tacit support? I'm guessing the former, but after what I've seen in the bubble after this happened, the latter wouldn't really surprise me. Breitbart, meanwhile, had a very similar approach to Newsmax, in that they initially condemned Kanye's anti-Semitism, but then subtly pushed his viewpoints out as though they were legitimate. An article on Breitbart says that Kanye was, quote, peddling Holocaust denial, and admits that 6 million Jews were murdered, but ends the article with Kanye's praise for Hitler without any other context or response. But there is another article reporting on the interview itself that straight up challenges Nick Fuentes' comments on Jews, saying, quote, he erroneously cited the Talmud, a compendium of Jewish law, to claim, falsely, that Jews detest Gentiles and, falsely, that Jewish law allows pedophilia in certain cases. So in other words, this is Breitbart, which was started and for a long time run by an actual white nationalist, actually defending Jewish people. So kudos to them for doing that, but at the same time, it seems like Breitbart doesn't really know which side to take to maximize their exposure or their profit while minimizing their reputational damage. So they do a little bit of both. But just in general, when talking about the interview itself and what Kanye said, it seems like they go along with what we've seen in most of the rest of the bubble, and decide either not to talk about it or just say, yeah, it happened. Speaking of Steve Bannon, Real America's Voice, his new network, never mentioned it at all the entire time I was looking. And that's really no surprise to me, since Bannon is a well-known white nationalist. Bannon himself, however, outside of Real America's News, is very outspoken on the Fuentes and Trump meeting, saying that it was a setup to make Trump look bad, which Milo Yiannopoulos has since said that it was, and I'm not going to say that I don't believe that, but I don't not believe that. But as far as Kanye's anti-Semitic comments themselves, Steve Bannon has remained completely silent. And my guess is because A, he agrees with him, and B, he doesn't want to alienate any of his Real America's Voice viewer base, which I would say is kind of ironic because most of the people who watch that show would probably agree with what Kanye said about Jews anyway. So if we could summarize the Bubble's response to the Kanye interview in one sentence, it would seem like most of the Bubble either quietly agrees with Kanye's sentiments about Jews and Hitler, or at the very least, says nothing to condemn them. Now, thankfully, there are some outlets in the Bubble who aren't afraid to speak out against Kanye. The National Review, for example, calls Kanye nuts and says he canceled himself by making pro-Hitler remarks. And interestingly, the article also goes on to condemn Trump for not denouncing Nick Fuentes and essentially not caring what hate he spreads because he's loyal and sycophantic. It says that, quote, Donald Trump is okay with evil as long as evil says nice things about him. And honestly, I'd say that's a pretty accurate assessment of the way Trump thinks. Because as we all know, Trump is just the ultimate egomaniac, and therefore doesn't really care about any qualities, good or bad, in whoever he meets, other than how much they suck up to him. But moving on to the New York Post, they also paid Kanye and Trump, with his latest comments attacking Jews for lack of loyalty to Israel, as both disgraced and unhinged. Which, again, is a pretty accurate assessment of both men, and I applaud them for it. But, and this is a big but, there is one article in the New York Post that states that Kanye was kicked off Twitter not because of the obvious hate symbol, but because the symbol, by which they mean the swastika covering the Star of David, was from a UFO warship cult. That's right, folks. The New York Post is arguing that Kanye did not get kicked off because of anti-Semitism, but because he plagiarized a logo. And the group they describe is called the Rael Movement, which claims to have 50,000 members in 85 countries and is often described as a cult. Raelians, as they call themselves, maintain that, quote, all life was created by the Elohim, who were extraterrestrials visiting Earth from another planet. Members of the sect maintain that their symbol, offensive for obvious reasons, means no disrespect to Jewish people. As a Raelian told Newsweek in 2020, don't worry, it has nothing to do with Jews and Nazis. So in other words, the New York Post is arguing in an article that came up, by the way, in the same search as when I was looking for articles about the Kanye interview, they are actually making the excuse that what Kanye tweeted with regards to the Star of David inside the swastika wasn't meant to represent Nazis or Jews. So even after calling Kanye and Trump unhinged and disgraced for their comments, the New York Post still seems to be trying to make excuses for what happened to Kanye and trying to minimize the bad things that he said. So what do we make of all this? Because to me anyway, it seems like for the most part, with a couple of notable exceptions, the Bubble and, as a result, the GOP, are either remaining silent or implicitly accepting these remarks from Kanye West. And even those outlets who have publicly condemned his remarks and/or his meeting with Nick Fuentes seem to always leave themselves an excuse or an out for the base to latch onto. It's almost as though the Bubble and the GOP are implicitly accepting that people like this, people who think the way that Kanye does, are part of their vision for America. After all, if they weren't okay with Nick Fuentes speaking for them, you would have seen a much bigger negative reaction from the mainstream GOP, other than Mitch McConnell just saying, people who meet with people like this don't have a good chance of becoming president of the United States. So in other words, it seems to me that the GOP, rather than pushing back against the hateful rhetoric that people like Kanye West and Nick Fuentes are pushing out, are sort of just letting it exist. They're letting it be. They're just saying, we're going to neither confirm nor deny it. Don't ask, don't tell. Because they know that a good portion of the Republican base agrees with these sentiments and wants them to be said publicly. Nick Fuentes is right about one thing, even with the terrible and racist viewpoints that he has, in that the base of the Republican Party, thanks to people like Donald Trump and now Kanye West, has become much more aggressive in the way that they want their politicians to be. They don't want doublespeak anymore. They don't want their politicians to try and dance around these controversial issues. They want them to say, yes, we don't like Jews. Yes, we don't like black people. And we're okay with that. Now, do I think that the majority of the Republican Party and or the conservative movement in general thinks this way? Honestly, no, I don't. It's just that this small group of people who seem to now be getting a toehold in the mainstream of the GOP and the conservative movement are becoming much louder and more important voices in the mainstream of conservative political discourse. And if the GOP had any semblance of self-survival or even common decency, they would immediately condemn all of these people and send them back to the abyss from whence they came. But as I've said many times before on this show, they need their power base in order to survive at all politically. But they know that actually placating them would be political suicide. So they sort of just meet in the middle. We're not going to condemn you, but we're not going to praise you either. We're just going to sort of let you be and pretend you don't exist. But when anything happens that you like, we'll definitely take the credit for it. And so in a situation like this, I think of a story I read a while back on Reddit. This person was talking about a job he used to have, and I'd like to read it to you all verbatim, with the bad words included. And I say this because I think it's very important for us to have this kind of attitude in the story that I'm about to tell you towards people like Kanye and Nick Fuentes and anyone else who would praise Nazis or Hitler or say anything anti-Semitic. So here's the story, and again, there's a lot of bad words in it, so listener discretion advised. Quote, I was at a shitty crust punk bar once, getting an after-work beer. One of those shitholes where the bartender clearly hates you. So the bartender and I were ignoring one another when someone sits next to me and he immediately says, no, get out. And the dude next to me says, hey, I'm not doing anything, I'm a paying customer. And the bartender reaches under the counter for a bat or something and says, out, now. And the dude leaves, kind of yelling. And he was dressed in a punk uniform, I noticed. Anyway, I asked what that was about, and the bartender was like, you didn't see his vest, but it was all Nazi shit. Iron crosses and stuff. You get to recognize them. And I was like, oh, okay, and he continues. You have to nip it in the bud immediately. These guys come in, and it's always a nice, polite one. And then you serve them, because you don't want to cause a scene. And then they become a regular, and after a while, they bring a friend. And that dude is cool too. And then they bring friends, and the friends bring friends, and they stop being cool, and then you realize, oh shit, this is a Nazi bar now. And it's too late, because they're entrenched, and if you try and kick them out, they cause a problem. So you have to shut them down. And I was like, oh damn. And he said, yeah, you have to ignore their reasonable arguments, because their end goal is to be terrible, awful people. And then he went back to ignoring me. But I haven't forgotten that at all. If one toxic person is allowed to stay in a community, others will leave it because they don't want to be associated with that. Before long, everyone decent is gone and all that's left is trash. End quote. Now, I don't know if this story is actually true or not. After all, I did just read it on a random Reddit post. But it doesn't change the fact that this is exactly what's currently happening, both in the bubble and in the GOP as a whole. They have let in a couple of, quote, nice fascists slash white supremacists slash anti-Semites. Charlie Kirk, Steve Bannon, and Milo Yiannopoulos come to mind. These people put on a professional demeanor. They dress in nice suits, with the exception of Steve Bannon and his many, many shirts. And they say things that both the mainstream of the GOP and the crazy part of the bubble can like and agree on. The problem becomes, as it might have with the Nazi bar story if the bartender didn't kick the first Nazi out, that the success and spread of these people make it possible for the more openly Nazi and anti-Semitic people to have a voice. And thus, we have Nick Fuentes and Kanye West being unapologetically and loudly racist, fascist, and anti-Semitic. And there's nothing the GOP or the bubble can do about it now, because they embraced the nice ones first, which, by definition, made it okay for their openly racist friends to join in. And now, as a result, using the analogy of the Reddit story, the bubble and the GOP have now become a Nazi bar. With this Kanye West and Nick Fuentes controversy, it seems like we've come to an inflection point in the Republican Party and conservatism in general in this country. And the fascist ideals I talked about at the beginning of the episode are very much now part of mainstream Republicanism. Fear of difference, appeal to social frustration, and obsession with a plot. I've shown previously how the first two are part of mainstream conservative discourse already. A perfect example of this being Tucker Carlson in his Patriot Purge documentary talking about legacy Americans. But the plot, in this case, is the Jewish conspiracy against Kanye that nobody on the right has yet condemned or even acknowledged was said. So the question then becomes, will the conservative mainstream push back against the obviously horrible direction that their movement is going into? Will they do the right thing and kick the Nazis out of their bar before it's too late? Or will they continue to say nothing and keep letting more and more extreme viewpoints into their narrative simply because they think it gives them more electability and power? For democracy's sake, I hope it's the former, but judging by the bubble's reaction and the GOP's silence to everything that's happened in the Kanye West and Nick Fuentes saga, it's certainly at this point looking more like the latter. And with that, I'd like to end with a quote from Desmond Tutu, a South African Nobel Peace Prize winner, and thanks to apartheid, obviously he knew all about discrimination. If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. And while all that may sound a bit bleak, fear not, I'm here to cheer you up with this episode's Alex Jones Award. Now, when I was originally going to record this episode last week, I did have a pretty good Jonesy lined up, going to Marjorie Taylor Greene, basically denying the existence of batteries and asking, how do electric airplanes really work? Would they be like slave ships, where people are being whipped to row them in midair? So it was pretty funny, and it would have definitely merited the Jonesy. But, you know, in life, most of the time you gotta go out and find the Jonesy, but every once in a while, the Jonesy finds you. This episode's Alex Jones Award goes, without a shadow of a doubt, to Donald Trump. And I think you can already guess why. It was a major story on pretty much every news outlet last week. It all started when, completely out of the blue, Trump decided to make, in true Trump fashion, an announcement announcing his next announcement.
America needs a superhero.
So if you haven't seen the video itself, basically after Trump says America needs a superhero, it shows what looks like a comic book portrait of Trump in a buff superhero suit shooting laser eyes at the screen, followed by the tease of major announcement. So naturally, when I saw this, I got pretty curious. Was he finally going to announce his healthcare plan or his plan for immigration? Was he going to announce that he was running for Speaker of the House so that the Republican House could impeach Biden and Kamala Harris and make him president again, thereby fulfilling the prophecy of QAnon? Turns out it wasn't any of these things, but in fact, something much more hilarious. Because the next day, we got that major announcement. And oh boy, it was not what anybody, including myself, was expecting.
Hello everyone, this is Donald Trump, hopefully your favorite president of all time, better than Lincoln, better than Washington.
I'm sorry, I just have to stop it for a second right there. This is classic Trumpian hyperbole, folks. It just shows you exactly what he thinks of himself, even when nobody else does. Better than Lincoln, better than Washington. Anyway, let's move on to the actual announcement.
I'm doing my first official Donald J. Trump NFT collection right here and right now. They're called Trump Digital Trading Cards. These cards feature some of the really incredible artwork pertaining to my life and my career. It's been very exciting. You can collect your Trump digital cards just like a baseball card or other collectibles. Here's one of the best parts. Each card comes with an automatic chance to win amazing prizes like dinner with me. I don't know if that's an amazing prize, but it's what we have. Or golf with you and a group of your friends at one of my beautiful golf courses, and they are beautiful. I'm also doing Zoom calls, a one-on-one meeting, autographing memorabilia, and so much more. We're doing a lot. My official Trump digital trading cards are $99, which doesn't sound like very much for what you're getting. Buy one and you will join a very exclusive community. It's my community, and I think it's something you're going to like, and you're going to like it a lot. They also make perfect gifts. So you can buy them with your credit card or crypto. All you need is an email address. Go to collecttrumpcards.com. and buy your Trump digital trading cards right now before they are all gone, and they will be gone. This is my first official Trump trading card NFT collection, and you get a chance to meet me. Go to collecttrumpcards.com right now, and remember, Christmas is coming, and this makes a great Christmas gift.
It seems like just when you think Trump can't sink any lower with regards to how badly he's willing to grift people, here he comes with his own NFT collection. That's right, folks. This major announcement that he clearly spent a pretty decent amount of money trying to set up is nothing more than a bunch of images featuring Donald Trump in a variety of, shall we say, embarrassing poses and situations. For example, there's the aforementioned superhero Trump, with a gigantic T across his chest and an American flag wrestling belt. There's also outdoor Southern Hunter Trump, wearing a camouflage suit and holding a rifle and a cowboy hat. Let's not forget astronaut Trump, wearing a spacesuit that says 45 on it, and wearing aviators inside of it, which kind of ironically makes him look a lot more like Dark Brandon. And, of course, let's not forget Stonks Trump, wearing a red hat that says Dow and fist-pumping as the stock market behind him skyrockets into oblivion. And if you haven't actually seen the pictures of these NFTs, which I would highly recommend you go check out, they all look like they were photoshopped by me in ninth grade, right after I had acquired a bootleg copy of Adobe Photoshop 7 and was just figuring out how to use it. Not mentioning, of course, that NFTs have sort of died out over the last 2 years, after everyone realizing that they're nothing more than a giant Ponzi scheme. Oh wait, you know what? I think it makes perfect sense now. Donald Trump is, as he always has been, just trying to make an extra buck from some stupid people. And the worst part about this whole thing is that he was right. Apparently there were 45,000 NFTs, and they all sold out within a day or two. But as the days went on, and people started looking more into this story and into the origin of these NFTs, it became very clear that this whole operation was not exactly on the up and up. For example, it was discovered mainly on his Sheriff Trump wearing a cowboy hat and a duster in a prairie NFT, that the image in question had actually been taken from an online store selling said duster and then just badly photoshopped to make it look a different color and to put Trump's face on it. Another example was the fighter jet pilot Trump NFT, in which there was still a Shutterstock logo visible on the NFT itself. In other words, whoever made the NFT took a Shutterstock file without paying for it, left the watermark on there, and then sold it as an NFT with Trump's face on it. And that's not shady at all, folks. But wait, there's more! Multiple news agencies tried to look into the origins of Trump's NFT company and discovered that the address listed as the headquarters has actually been used in the past for fraud by other criminals. There's also some fine print in the NFT contract itself that states that in any secondary market sales, 10% of it will automatically go back to Trump himself. So in other words, you can't even sell these NFTs without giving more money to Trump. So even though all 45,000 of his NFTs were bought, and there are plenty of examples on both Twitter and other platforms of people saying, yeah, this guy bought a Trump NFT, it's not a stretch to say that the fact that all of them were bought within a day, combined with all these other shady, interesting things about the NFT company itself, says that there's probably a lot more going on under the radar with this whole NFT thing. Especially considering what MAGA Nation's reaction to these NFTs were, which I would describe as mixed at best. Here's a few examples from Truth Social. Folks are in real need, and this is the egotistical bastard's announcement? It is now beyond any doubt whatsoever that Trump was a chaos and now demoralization agent for the New World Order. We've all been played. I'm tired of making excuses for him. I guess I will never stop having some tiny sliver of hope that all this is part of some grand plan, but at this point, I'm refusing to be a sucker anymore. What the hell? This is his major announcement? Is he tone deaf or what? Does Donald Trump really think patriots give a shit about trading cards? Trump saw how much Hunter made off of art and got jealous, but was too lazy to pick up a paintbrush. I hope this is some kind of April Fool's joke. Other responses called it a terrible idea, the final straw, unserious, out of touch, and not the man for 2024. We want relief for misery, not trading cards. I'm going to be honest with you folks. I've never seen MAGA Nation react so negatively to anything Trump has ever done. Which, as I said earlier, really puts into question exactly how he was able to sell out of all of those NFTs instantly. So I'm definitely going to be following this story to see what comes of it, because I'm pretty sure there's something else going on here, and I want to see what it is. But until that happens, congratulations to Donald, I sell NFTs after they were cool, Trump, the winner of this episode's Alex Jones Award. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Undercover Bubble. If you like what you heard, don't be afraid to subscribe and tell your friends. You can follow me on Twitter at @UCB_podcast, or you can follow my personal Twitter account at @PMOTheMusicMan. As I said at the beginning of the show, I'm going to be scaling back the cadence of episodes a little bit for the next couple of months. So there will probably be one, maybe two more episodes before I go on vacation in February. In any case, I hope you all have a happy and safe holiday and New Year, and I'll see you in 2023. Have a good one, folks.